from the Weedy Studios of WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA. It is time for another fiery hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks. You bet your garden. I have often suggested flame weeding to take care of your unwanted plants like crabgrass and dandelions. I'm Mike McGrath. And on today's show, I'll reveal the proper way to weed with flame in this scary new world of wildfires. Plus, goat yoga, the many faces of compost, and your fabulous phone call questions, comments, tips, tricks, suggestions, and devilishly demented deconstructions. So stay right where you are, cats and kittens. It's all coming up like you picking the perfect compost.
WDIY has been broadcasting in the Lehigh Valley and beyond for 30 years, providing news.
These planes were hijacked.
The Bethlehem Steel Corporation will end its steelmaking production in Bethlehem.
We hope that you enjoyed hearing from the Dalai Lama.
Local public affairs.
As I say, it's a race of interest.
What we're experiencing today will later on be studied.
And music.
My name is Janice Ian.
Our guest, Lake Street Dive.
In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Petey Yarrow from Peter, Paul, and Mary.
WDIY, since 1995.
From the strange studios of WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA, it is time for another Toss the Puffin Hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks, you bet your garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and in this week's In the News, we present our own and now for something completely different. A story from the National Geographic website announcing, quote, "It's throw a baby puffin off a cliff season in Iceland." Young puffins have to leave their burrows alone and find the ocean without the help of their parents. And every year, locals set out to help. Many residents of the Westman Islands, home to 1.6 million of the birds and 4,300 people, spend their August nights looking for baby puffins, also known as pufflings. Townspeople, including families with young children, search the village for wayward puffins, take them home, and in the morning, throw them off a cliff. Despite their large numbers on the island, the puffin population is considered critically endangered here, having lost half its numbers in the last 30 years. Residents risk bloody hands and broken toes, and just about everybody in town has a harrowing story about a rescue attempt. Quote, "You get scratched up, you sprain your ankle, you have to go down under cars, you have to go up on roofs. Some people even jump in the harbor to save them." At the end of summer, adult puffins spend 8 months at sea before migrating south to the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, a hot spot for seabirds to feast. When they return to breed in the early spring, a female adult will lay a single egg a season in a burrow several feet deep. After hatching, the baby's first 6 weeks of life are in total darkness. Their parents take turns feeding them, but when those parents leave the island to begin their eighth-month journey at sea, the pufflings are left behind. Many of those pufflings get confused by the town's infrastructure and lights. If there were no town here, they would probably just walk towards the shore and jump into the sea on their own, residents explain. Instead, they get lost, and the town mobilizes to save their lives. The island's, quote, "puffling queens" are two sisters who've been captivated by this ecologically sound hunt since they were toddlers. Now in their 30s with kids of their own, they capture hundreds of pufflings each season. Now these pufflings look nothing like their cartoonish adult counterparts. The baby's beak is slender and charcoal gray, devoid of their trademark adult colors, and their faces have grayish feathers instead of being a stark white. Once you catch a puffling, you have the proud distinction of being a puffling mom or dad for a night. You take them home, keep them in a cardboard box, and leave them alone. No food or drink. The next day, the Puffin Patrol registers their rescues online to better help scientists understand how the birds are coping with environmental change. Then they head to the ocean where they say goodbye and throw them off a cliff. Why are they thrown from the cliffs and not released at sea level? There's no strict scientific reason, although the wind up on the cliffs does help them with flight. Some families with very small children release them on a small sandy beach nearby. But everyone agrees that the cliffs are more fun, especially those children.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. In just a little bit, we will discuss the whys and wherefores of safe weed burning. But first, a couple more of your fabulous phone calls. Every once in a while, we get a caller who is unavailable to speak on the show, but really wants their question answered. So every once in a while, we answer a voicemail, which just means more me talking to myself, you know? So here we go. Producer James, would you be so kind as to play the voicemail?
Hi, my name's Kurt. I'm from Bethlehem. I'd like to replace the grass in my side yard with a meadow. What are the best wildflowers to plant that need no maintenance? Thank you.
Thank you, Kurt. The answer is there are none. There are no plants that don't need maintenance, unless you live in the middle of the woods and you're not going to try to change anything. But I did some research on this because I just hate telling people what plants they should plant. So I looked around on a bunch of websites and got some parameters, one of which is, hold on to your hat here, it takes 2 to 5 years of fairly intensive work to establish the meadow. Eventually, if you do it right, it can become no work, but there's a lot of work involved. And part of that, of course, is you need to remove the grass. Now, Owen Wormser, who I heard on Joe Lample's show, kept recommending tilling for this. He actually says, turning organic matter back into the earth restores the soil and builds it up. Yeah, kind of. It also brings a bajillion weed seeds to the surface that were previously buried but will now be exposed to light and germinate, and tilling destroys soil structure. This is something we've learned over the past couple of decades. One of the benefits of having a side lawn or a yard or a meadow or border plantings, all those plants are sequestering carbon, which we want to stay in the earth. But every time you till, you're releasing carbon and especially nitrogen into the air. And this guy recommends doing it over and over again. And that's a recipe for very poor soil. I have a friend who I was giving garlic to so he could try to get a little garlic farm started. And after 2 or 3 years, he gave up. And I said, why? He said, well, look at the size of these things. And I said, oh, what are you using for weed control? Oh, I just keep tilling the hell out of it. So he was destroying the structure of his own soil. So one other way, if you really want to do this, you really want to get the soil up, you can get a sod cutter, or there are special knives if you're young and able and like to work in the dirt, that you can literally roll up strips of your existing grass. This is how they harvest grass to sell in the spring as turf, you know, instant lawn. So you can do that. And then if you have a bare spot someplace else, you can put the turf down there instantly and water it in. Or what a lot of people have done over the years is just pile it up upside down, green facing down, roots in the air, over on top of each other. And that breaks down into fabulous compost after a couple of years. Then, although they don't mention it, after you get the grass out of there, I would suggest, depending on the time of year, you water the area heavily and make sure you have a sharp hoe. Although it's not diamond shaped, the hoe that's called the diamond hoe is like a razor blade, and you just glide that gently across the surface of the earth after about 2 weeks, and you will have eliminated 80 to 90% of the weeds that were trying to come back up. I mean, because whenever you disturb the soil, you're gonna bring weed seeds to the surface. You know, meadows are kind of strange things. Even though this guy is totally into meadows, he recognizes that it's a lot of work, and you're going to be busy those 2 to 5 years, and then after that, it can be self-sustaining. Now, I'm not sure if you just are tired of mowing, or you think that other plants are more beneficial than grass. I will tell you that lawn grass sequesters carbon better than any other plant. So by leaving it in place, you're doing your part to fight against climate change. It also pumps oxygen into the air. And because every blade of grass is, you know, a blade of grass, putting back lots of oxygen, absorbing our CO2 and sequestering it in the soil. So the only evil about lawns is that lawn care companies sell people unnecessary products. If they would just cut at 3.5 inches high, water it when we, you know, go a week or two without rain, it's self-sustaining. So you got to think about that. A meadow also needs 20 to 25 inches of rain annually. So that shouldn't be a problem. They also need full sun, a minimum of half a day of sunlight that is uninterrupted by shade from trees or buildings, whereby you can plant shade-tolerant grasses. One of the things they say, if you go through with this, you plant a full meadow, think about putting a 2 to 4 foot wide lane down the middle so that you can walk through and admire your plants and not be a target of ticks. I mean, wildflowers are beautiful, but they're just the right height, that's where they're going to hover and wait for you to walk by. Meadows also attract deer, which will then go after your wanted plants, but they'll also be dropping some ticks in there. So nothing is as simple as it may seem. What I would suggest is take one side of this yard that gets the most sun and create a border planting of the wildflowers you want. Now, counterintuitively, you don't want tall ones and short ones. Ideally, the whole thing should be tall to recreate a meadow and also to give you color at the height you want to see it. If you fill it in with half and half, the tall plants tend to overshade the lower plants. And for that, you would go to your local nursery and garden center and you would say, what are the best wildflowers for this situation? You can also buy a mix of wildflower seeds designated for your area, but then you really have to cultivate them and watch out for weeds and protect them for those 2 to 5 years. Whereby a nice flowering border would achieve hopefully some of the things you want. And if you don't want to mow a strip of grass up the middle, consider hardscaping that. So you can even walk through your meadow on rainy days. Penn State Agricultural Extension offices, they are the big soil lab plant information holder for all of Pennsylvania. But they also have local outposts, kind of extension extensions. And they would be your best bet at showing you what is the better choice for your exact needs. And another thing you might consider is a well-behaved, low-growing ground cover like thyme. There are species of thyme that really hug the ground, and they're no maintenance, and they're soft enough for you to walk on, and it would be easier to replace an entire lawn with creeping thyme. Or go look at well-behaved ground covers. You're going to see a whole big list. And then again, maybe you got a border on each side with low-growing thyme in the summer. I'm liking this more all the time. Get it? Sorry. So do your diligence. Pick the plants that you want. Make sure they're local. And really do some research to see how you're going to do this. It is not as simple as throwing seed over top of your grass. Sorry. Send us your emails. Send us your voicemails. Send us everything. We want to hear from you one way or the other. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that the time has come to bring your houseplants and overwintering pepper plants indoors. After you blast any bugs off them with super sharp streams of water. And then you do it again. But don't go cleaning up your plants in winter just yet, because we'll be right back to discuss the many forms of compost and how to pick the one that's best for you. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA.
For the past 3 decades, WDIY has sustained itself through direct contributions from listeners. Our model is simple. The people who listen to the service are the ones who support the service. As WDIY celebrates its landmark 30th anniversary, we invite you to join us as a WDIY member by making a membership gift today. This is something you could do right now to make a meaningful difference in your community. Call 610-694-8000 8100 extension 4 or online at wdiy.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, is flame weeding still a viable form of weed control with all the wildfires consuming vast parts of our country? And how do you design a garden not to wash away in a flood or have your plants drowned in a flood? We will tackle those important questions and take more of your fabulous phone calls. But right now it is time to welcome back our special guest, Jake Chalfin from Laurel Valley Soils. Jake, welcome back to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me back. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, I think we're going to get a chair with your name on it here or something like that. We had you on last week. I think I had promised you we would talk about compost, but then we got this flood of questions about topsoil.
Yep.
And I think that's even more misunderstood than compost. So I led you down the garden path, so to speak, but intending to get you back right away, because as we were finishing up, you brought up a really important topic. You mentioned that fall, literally right now, is the time to top dress cool season lawns with compost, which may sound crazy to some people, but it is a way to help your lawn recover if you've been using chemicals on it, and it adds organic matter to your soil. You're building up soil instead of degrading it and losing it through erosion. So walk us through the steps, Jake. Make it happen.
All right. So fall season grasses thrive in sort of the shoulder seasons, if you will. They like warm but cool weather with stable amounts of moisture. So spring and fall provides those kinds of conditions. So that's really the best time of year to do any type of planting. But we like to really concentrate on lawn renovations in the fall because they've been potentially suffered quite a bunch of abuse over the summer, whether it's just a lot of foot traffic or fungus pressure. You know, it was very hot and moist on the East Coast this summer, and we got some fungal damage. And, you know, one of the biggest issues lawns face is just overall compaction. And compaction is kind of a result of poor quality soil structure that's compounded by foot traffic. And organic matter has the unique ability to help build the soil matrix and create porosity in the soil, allowing for the soils to become lighter in their bulk density, and allows for the right balance of moisture and oxygen in the soil profile, which supports healthy root zones. Healthy root zones support healthy plants.
Yeah.
People
don't think about how important it is to have air in your soil. That's one of the things that was hardest for me to wrap my head around. But lawns need airspace so that their roots can grow without, you know, hitting nothing but objects and, you know, things that hold them back. There's only two ways to do that. One is to have your soil core aerated with a machine that pulls out plugs, and you can just imagine in your head that, you know, as those holes fill in, of course your soil gets less dense. But over the past bunch of years, we've learned that compost can have that same effect. You know, it's kind of like, oh, you're poor in organic matter. Here you go. Here's organic matter.
Yes. Absolutely. So the other element besides bulk density and porosity is that, you know, soil and the plants that live in the soil, it, you know, as you preach a lot, it's a living organism. And just like humans, the living biology in your soil needs that oxygen and moisture balance to survive. So top dressing in the fall with compost provides organic matter and organic-based nutrients and a ton of soil biology. So you're kind of getting a threefer there.
Yeah.
And you can apply it directly onto your grass. We don't want to smother the grass, so an application rate of a quarter inch to a half inch is typically ideal. And a lot of times, if you're going to go through the effort of doing a top dressing, you know, you've got your time blocked out, you've got some tools or some equipment, you might as well do the full trifecta, which is doing some core aerating and overseeding at the same time you do your compost application. Those three things in combination really make a great difference.
It is so difficult to help people who've been sold on these four-step programs, you know, four different explosive chemicals that are guaranteed to make your lawn weak and your soil poor. You know, they're used to just rolling it out in a spreader and thinking they're doing the right thing, right? You feed a hungry mouth.
It is, you know, sort of physically an easy thing to do. And, you know, we're inundated by these messages on TV and radio. And you walk into a home store and there's signage everywhere just, you know, shouting out, hey, do this, do this, do this. But it doesn't necessarily mean that that's the right message or that's what you want to do for your own lawn.
Oh, there's that horrifying fake Scots guy on TV. Feed your lawn. Feed it. Even if it is the worst possible time of year to do that, like the middle of summer. You know, it takes a lot for people to tune out these hard sells. I mean, this is one of the most overwhelming marketing efforts that we have to deal with, the idea that we have to use chemicals and explosives and poisons, you know, because that's what they've been selling. You know, you can't copyright compost.
Absolutely. And you know, getting back to why the fall, you know, renovating lawns or top dressing lawns, you know, doing lawn treatments in the fall, you know, we're sort of following the same guidance as you would any plant. You know, planting in the fall is just great because plants will go dormant in the winter, and that's a natural process. So when you first, you know, put down grass seed and it germinates and it starts to grow into a grass seedling, you know, that it's a pretty weak plant just because it's in its infant stage. And if that plant has the opportunity to, you know, grow and then germinate and then go through its infancy and then naturally hibernate over the winter, when it comes back in the spring, it's going to be twice as strong. And once it gets through the spring into the summer season where there's going to be a lot of stress, by then it is quite hardy. Versus if you're seeding in the spring, you know, your plant's going to germinate. It's going to go through its seedling stage, its infancy stage. And really before it gets to really get strong and mature, it gets slapped with a lot of heat and humidity and dryness. And so, by all means, if you need a seed in the fall, in the spring, you seed in the spring. You just do what you got to do. But it's that fall planting season that really gives you the edge for having the best lawn or the best plant in the following season.
Now, I tell people, if you have a cool season grass like bluegrass or fescue, you feed it in the fall and not the spring. I try not to give people any chance of failure. I want them to try this and to see it work. And you wouldn't believe, or maybe you would, the number of appearances I do that they want me to talk about lawn care. And that always blows people's minds because, of course, it's the opposite of what they're told. Spring is when all these giant bags appear and the advertising and, hey, destroy your lawn and we'll give you a pen. And it is an overwhelming temptation. You really have to defend yourself. And one thing that I have had to explain to every audience over and over is you feed your lawn in the fall, not to get it ready for winter. You're feeding your cool season lawn in the fall to replenish all the food it had to use to survive summer. It's it's a cool season lawn. It has no love of summer. I think we got, like, where I live, like 4 actual days of summer this year. But it really is, you're repairing as much as you're preparing. Now, let's talk for a minute about the reality. You go to a garden center or some other place that sells bulk compost, and if you're lucky, you fall into a place that carries soil they got from you. But now I'm thinking we're asking for something specific, right? Are we asking, first of all, for screened compost, because that makes sure the particles are smaller? And is there any kind of secret as to what kind of compost you could put in a spreader?
I love it. I love this question. So my biggest thing is, even though I have a specific compost that I manufacture, I like to try to just be transparent as I can. I think it all comes down to quality. Quality of compost. It doesn't necessarily matter the type of compost as long as it's a good quality compost. And so if you've got a local municipality that's making a yard waste or a leaf compost, as long as it's a really good compost, that's fine. If you've got an agricultural-based compost, a manure-based compost, that's great too. There are good quality and bad quality composts in every category. Just, you know, do your evaluation. Look for the best quality compost that's local to you, and then use that. And, you know, we talked last week about different ways to evaluate soil. The clump, the, hold it in your hand, make a ball, see if it breaks up and is it friable. Does it smell earthy and good, or sort of stinky in the wrong way? A little bit of odor in compost is natural. And what's the particle size look like? Obviously, if you're doing a top dressing and you're spreading it thin, it's best to have a finer texture. So these are the kind of common sense things that you want to look for. You know, depending on the scale of your project, you can buy good quality compost in bags. It's actually easier to find good quality compost in bags than it is to find topsoil in bags. Like we talked about last week, a lot of times where they quote-unquote call topsoil in a bag is really a blend of something, of a bunch of things that are probably not topsoil, but pure compost in a bag, chances are, it is actually pure compost. So you have a better shot with buying compost bagged than soil. But yes, you can buy it in bags. If you've got a small project, you can buy it loose in bulk form. If you've got a bigger project, if you only need a few bulk yards, your garden center can probably deliver that to you. And if you are more commercial oriented and need a few tri-axle or tractor trailer loads, you can deal with a wholesale supplier. One way to judge quality is by selecting for an STA certified compost. The STA stands for Seal of Testing Assurance, and that is a program managed by the United States Compost Council, and it provides a uniform list of criteria that if the compost performs well in those categories, then it would be recommended for use. So look for the STA label when possible. And as far as application, you know, just because you think it's a great idea doesn't necessarily mean it's straightforward. So, you know, the game plan for how to apply it is important. If it's a small project, you can take shovelfuls and shake it around your yard and then rake it in by hand. If you've got a slightly larger project, say a half an acre, a lot of the local rental centers now have small self-powered top dressing units specifically designed for compost that you can rent. In the past, a lot of the top dressers you could rent were really designed for granular fertilizer or sand, and the compost wouldn't necessarily flow through those machines very well without getting clumpy and bridging and getting stuck. So now they do have smaller residential scaled self-powered compost spreading machines that you can rent. Not every rental center has them, but they're out there. And then, of course, there are bigger application methods for the commercial industry. But there are a number of different ways to apply compost on a lawn.
And one thing that has always bolstered me, after I've been giving my lawn talks for about a decade or so, I would talk about this, and I would say it's not going to make your lawn look dirty. It's not going to make it look like a mud pile. Don't cut your grass too low. And within a week or two, you probably won't see any compost. And what's happening now is I get testimony. I get people standing up and saying, that's right, we were amazed. We couldn't see anything the week afterwards. And of course, our lawn has never been greener. Our teeth have never been brighter, you know, everything.
That's a good point. I do get the concern once in a while, is this going to smell? Is it going to look funny? Is it going to make my pet sick if my pet goes out and eats some of the compost? And so the answer is, no. If you've selected a good quality compost, it's not going to smell. And if it has a little bit of an odor to begin with, a natural kind of earthy odor, that will dissipate within a few days. If you apply it at the right application rate without smothering your grass will certainly grow up through it. And like you said, it'll become almost invisible within a couple of days. And then eventually it'll break down or work itself into the soil. And so, you'll never see it really again. And as far as your pets eating it, it's very natural. It's not going to make them sick.
What people don't realize is that the stuff they were using before could well be making their dog sick. Because if they're spraying their lawn for, I don't know why people spray their lawns, but they're told to, so they do it, that's getting on your dog's porous pores. Yeah. And a dog or cat, then they're going to lick their paws. So
this is the fertility application that is safe for children and pets. I have young children, and I do not restrict them whatsoever. If I top dress my lawn, kids can go out and play, that same day. There's no harm whatsoever. We use this compost on sports fields for high schools and colleges, and they play games on it immediately. It's, 100% human safe.
That is wonderful. A perfect idea because, we're talking about football and lacrosse and other outdoor sports. And those are the lawns that also had baseball on them in the summertime. Those are the lawns that need a little medicine, that need some rejuvenation, some food that they can absorb beyond naturally. Well, it is always a pleasure to speak to our old friend, the czar of compost, Jake Chalfin from Laurel Valley Soils, which is a wholesale operation. So I like to talk to them because they know how it's done. It's not just dropped off. They made it, so to speak, so they can speak the best to it. And I think this has been very informative and timely. Let's go over two things first. Is it TCA?
Yep. The program to evaluate compost is called the STA, Seal of Testing Assurance Program.
STA. Oh, boy. My memory is, what was I saying? And it comes from the U.S. Composting Council?
Yeah, they're the governing body that oversees the implementation of that program and make sure there's a all the labs are using the right testing protocols and all that good stuff.
Anybody who wants to get off their chemicals or even improve their organic care, I've been to that website, the U.S. Composting Council. You can get a PhD there.
Yeah, it's a lot of good information.
All right. Well, Jake, thank you again. And I'm sure we'll have you back soon. In the meantime, bye for now.
Oh, man, it's always so fun. I just love the opportunity to nerd out on compost. So this will be the highlight of my week. So
there you go. The Nerd Club. All right, Jake, thanks. We'll see you again. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and warn everybody that many of us are experiencing unusually cold weather, which tomatoes, peppers, and overwintering houseplants really do not care for. So obey the basic rule. Wait to put tender plants outside in the spring, but rush to bring them back indoors in the fall. But don't you go breaking out the sweaters and jackets just yet, because we'll be right back with important advice about flaming and flooding and more of your flaming phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. Whether we like it or not, fall weather is embracing many of our gardens way too soon this season. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss fall chores to achieve and avoid, and how to safely stretch your summer harvest. Plus your fabulous phone calls. That's on the next You Bet Your Garden. Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and we are in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will discuss the whys and wherefores of safe weed burning, and touch on a very special way otherwise to keep weeds from ever showing up, and a great way to protect your plants during floods. You can keep their little heads above water. But first, a couple more of your fabulous phone calls at 610-694-8100. Pam, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike. How are you doing today?
I am just ducky. It's a rainy day, and it's cool already, so Ducky has his, like, wetsuit on. But otherwise, you know, we needed a little bit of rain. That's what we're getting. Pam, where are you?
I'm in Ambler, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What do you got for me?
So my question is, we have a very large old sycamore tree in our yard, and this fall it shed about 2 trash cans full of bark. And at first I was a little concerned, but then I read up that that's very normal because they grow so quickly for that bark to peel off. So I thought it was kind of a waste to just throw it in. I was going to maybe put it in the compost, but then I thought, well, I should check to see if that's a good idea. And then I thought, you know what, it kind of looks nice, and if I break it up in smaller pieces, maybe I could use it as mulch, like over top of the compost that I might put in the garden. Right now, I just mostly have flower beds. But what are your thoughts on that? Is it a good mulch to use? I know I've used pine straw, and I've used leaf mulch, and I just wanted to check in with you.
Wood is wood at its elemental level, and it will absorb nitrogen from your soil. I don't think it's especially be great as a weed preventing mulch. And you know, it's kind of big and heavy and could prevent the emergence of some smaller plants. So no, not on the top. They are peculiar trees. A lot of people like that exfoliating shape. Now, these panels have fallen to the ground on their own, right?
Right, yes.
So here's what I'm going to suggest, because I've been doing this a lot at home. As I get older, I really need to be growing much more in containers so I can reach them. But if you have a container that's that high, you know, even a huge pond, one of the questions has always been, what do you put in the bottom of the pot so you don't have to use as much soil? And people came up with marbles and those terrible packing peanuts and pot shards. And research showed us clearly that the plants did not like that. You know, they're already confined. They're already in a prison, so to speak.
True.
So they didn't like anything taking up space in their container that wasn't organic matter. So I got into hugelkultur, which is a discipline of permaculture in which you collect all the fallen wood around your house and then use it every time you make or remake either a bed in the garden or a big container on legs. You put like 1/4 of this bark-like material. You can do that, like I said, out in the ground, at bottom of a raised bed. It works fabulous. And we even have pots that we don't need the help with, but they seem to respond real well. Because if you mixed that wood in with the soil, it would negate the nitrogen in the soil. But by the time the roots of your plants get down to this layer of old wood, half of it is soil already. And it's just going to treat it like any other plant matter, especially if you've got old wood, you know, kind of rotting wood, stuff that's soft already. It is the absolute best use for that kind of stuff.
Okay. So I didn't know if bark was the same as wood. I mean, I know it's part of a tree and it's wood, but I didn't know if it was different.
That's an interesting question because, you know, the trash wood mulch they sell these days, that's chipped up freshly cut trees. And they remove the bark. Okay?
Okay, sounds good. I appreciate your help. That was very helpful. So I will definitely use it that way.
All right, Pam, thank you.
Wonderful.
This was fun.
Yes, it was very nice. Thank you so much. You have a wonderful day, and I will talk to you next time, all right? Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
As promised, it is time for the question of the week, which we're calling Fighting Weeds with Fire Safely. Larkin in Nashville writes, thank you for recommending we stop using Roundup. But weeds are tough, and I fear that nothing works besides toxins and flame. I was sad to learn that the black weed-blocking fabric breaks down into microplastics and other chemicals. McGrath interjecting here. It never worked well to begin with, and it's a real struggle to get rid of because grass grows up through those tiny little drainage holes in the fabric and anchors the darn stuff firmer than a load of bricks. Back to Larkin. I'm alarmed when burning is recommended for weed control, especially if that advice is heard in drier regions by less aware listeners. With all of the wildfires consuming vast stretches of land these days, would you please add cautions to your flame weeding advice, especially asking potential users to first consider if the region is in a dry spell, or recommend something else if there is anything? And maybe you can also propose solutions to our other changing weather realities, like fire, drought, mudslides, and floods. He continues, some ideas might include planting no-mow ground covers on slopes instead of, quote, rock gardens in areas that are prone to flooding and mudslides, and maybe installing rock gardens where people are experiencing more fires and have less water, as well as urging them to clear brush mechanically near their homes. Maybe with the help of those rental goats you always talk about. Hey, and they can also do goat yoga with the goats. McGrath here. That last line blew my mind. But it turns out that goat yoga is a real thing. As NPR reported back in 2018, where have I been all this time? The activity is perfectly in line with what goats do. It's just natural behavior, says goat specialist Susan Shoian of the University of Maryland College of Agriculture and Natural Resources. Goats love to climb. Who had this bright idea to bring goats and yoga together? Yoga Journal credits Lainey Morse, who has a farm in Albany, Oregon, as an early adopter. A cute idea to host a yoga class at her farm while baby goats pranced around has turned into a phenomenon with a more than 500-person waiting list. And there's also a business side to this, adds NPR. For folks who own a small group of goats, renting them out for goat yoga classes is a good way to increase their income stream. McGrath again. Let's not forget the goat's ability and enthusiasm for devouring invasive species, especially on slopes that are tough for people to navigate. And goats should be used extensively in fire-prone regions to help keep brush and explosive trees like palms, pines, junipers, cedars, eucalyptus, and firs under control while those trees are still small. The website for California's El Dorado County lists several less flammable options, and the urban forestry page on the site Forestry Now has an excellent list of the good, the bad, and the ugly. Getting back to flame weeding precautions and alternatives. First, if your area is under a burn watch, don't even think about it. And have a hose handy, even when you're just grilling outdoors. As they say, sparks fly. And if you set off fireworks during dry times, I hope you get arrested. Overreaction? Whew, you wouldn't believe this. A site called High Country News reports that on average, more than 18,500 fires ignite during Independence Day celebrations from fireworks and campfires. And that number is only to get worse as climate change accelerates droughts and heat waves worsen, making vegetation incredibly dry. However, if the weather is normal and the vegetation isn't bone dry, flame weeding can be an excellent tactic, especially around this time of year when annual crabgrass plants produce thousands of seeds that will otherwise sprout in the spring unless you prevent their persistence with a toasty roasty. But never flame weed alone. Always have a helper handy, or a handy helper, at the ready to put out any smoldering remains with a garden hose. Do not rely on yourself. Enlist assistance before you start. And hang around for a while after you're finished to make sure everything is out. And that dreaded weed barrier stuff, growing in raised beds, which of course is highly recommended for many reasons, allows you to substitute a layer of cardboard underneath the bed instead of weed-inviting products. You'll get better weed blockage without the mess and plastic pollution. Raised beds are also a great way to protect your plants from flooding. The higher your beds, the safer your plants are going to be when the water rises. And finally, high-strength vinegars labeled for horticultural use are highly effective against weeds, especially in dry times when flame is not an option. Just be sure the vinegar is a high-strength version and not the 5% white vinegar from the supermarket. It's been too diluted with water to work well on tough weeds. And always wear gloves and protective eyewear when spraying anything. We leave you with a final word from Larkin. I started this email because it freaks me out hearing about flame-based weeding. I've spent hours thinking about it. Now I need to get outside. Thanks. Well, thank you, Larkin, for bringing up an important topic. That sure was some important advice about weeding and plant protection, now wasn't it? Luckily, you can read the details over at your leisure or your leisure by following the link for the Gardens Alive Question of the Week at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Yikes! My producer is threatening to contaminate my compost if I don't get out of the studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 610-694-8100, extension number 3, or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at youbetyourgarden1@gmail.com. Oh, and could you please include your location? And visit our Facebook page where we post new material every day. Share your observations and feedback about the show. Provide important and informative updates about the show. A link to the written version of the Gardens Alive Question of the Week. And links to our priceless podcast. It's all at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Oh, by the way, producer James has let me know, I think he told me this 6 times already, that when an interview goes long, we have to cut it for the show that airs, but he puts up the entire interview on the podcast. So, something new for you to do. You Bet Your Garden is a public radio show and podcast produced and delivered to you every week from the studios of NPR station WDIY in Bethlehem, PA. You Bet Your Garden was created by Mike McGrath. Mike McGrath was created when a certain and mysterious Dr. Pretorius came to call. Our mysterious musical director is Ken Queter. Our social media director is Amanda Norfleet. Our peerless prince of profound production is James Ziproth. Margaret McConnell is the executive director of WDIY-FM. Our executive producer is the always lovely Jonas Bowen. And our incredible assistant is the awesome Ninja Sean. Special thanks to our compost crazy guest, Jake Chalfin from Laurel Valley Soils. And again, you can hear a little more of that interview when you listen to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, continuing to remind you that showing your support for our programming by becoming a member of WDIY and/or your local NPR station is more important now than ever. So please make that membership pledge right now so we can be sure that I can see you again next week.